2 weeks, Joko and I have been talking on Sundays about essentially how can I avoid being pummeled by difficult circumstances. He picked up his koan and then I ran with it again last week, which a monk asks Master Tozan, sort of the beginner of our Soto line, how can I avoid heat and cold from coming down and pressing on me? How can I get away from that? And Master Tozan says, well, go where there isn't any hot or cold. Duh. The monk says, where is that? And Master Tozan says, when it's cold, the cold kills you. When it's hot, the heat kills you. You just imagine monks are shriveling up. No, it's a big mistake to put your energy into avoiding or escaping circumstances because they're uncomfortable or inconvenient. And this is so out of touch with our can-do culture. Can-do, fix it, let's turn up the thermostat. Right? Or let's figure out another way. But we wouldn't want to abandon that wonderful, how can we figure it out mind. It's a wonderful aspect of our culture. So what is this saying, right? And which of us is ever going to put down avoiding and escaping on some permanent basis? It's impossible for us. There's always another little distraction, a little computer game, a little something to read instead of doing something else, something to while away time. And sometimes that's fine. But when there's something you maybe, where you are, and you, I just did it this morning. I went and started playing some, Free Rice, computer game, a game on the internet, which is a vocabulary thing. It's fun. But then after a few minutes and you're still doing it and you stop, you realize that suddenly, you know, I didn't know where I was anymore. I wasn't where I had been. Somehow my life had disappeared into this screen, you know, into this narrow exchange of me and this screen. My life had kind of shrunk down to this very narrow thing going back and forth. And I was really off balance. Where am I? What am I supposed to be doing here? What's next? Isn't to say we don't want to play games. God knows. But learning to let things be, to just stay here. Oh, I'm a little bit uncomfortable and I don't really know what to do with myself, but I, you know, why don't I just stay here? You know, where I don't know what to do with myself and I'm a little uncomfortable and I have a little time. Why don't I just stay here? Why is it so hard to do that? It's the work of a lifetime to see ourselves moving that way. When to move and when not to move. As Joko was saying, oh, it's cold. My hands are cold. Oh, okay. Or, oh, my hands are cold. This is terrible. But as soon as possible, I need to do something to warm them up. Well, maybe you do want to do something to warm them up. But if right now my hands are cold and I say, oh, my hands are cold, this is just cold. It's beyond if it's good or bad. It's just cold. I don't have to wiggle and wriggle because it's cold or my foot's gone to sleep. It's not gritting your teeth in endurance. It's not fussing. It's about not budging, being able to not budge so that you have a choice. It's a time to budge. It's a time to do something. And there's a time to stay put, to plant your feet in the sand. And that choice is really, really important, to have the alternatives. You know, planting your feet in the sand, having decided to meet the bull charging at you. Having decided that for some reason this is a reasonable thing to do. When you stay put, or I stay put, or any of us, when I stay put in the middle of my life as it is, here, where it's happening, then I can draw some wisdom and strength from the reality of what's going on. And I'm still cold or hot. That hasn't gone away, but that's not all that's going on. When you're cold, when it's cold, you're cold. Before we do something about it. So as there was Joko talking about, when it's cold, the cold kills you. When it's hot, the heat kills you. And then Tuesday afternoon that week, I was sitting zazen here with a couple of other people, and it was kind of chilly. And anyway, I sat a period of zazen. And then I went upstairs and got a nice warm shawl and came down for the second zazen. I was very cozy in the second zazen. And afterwards I said, oops, maybe I'm going to go to a cold Buddhist hell. I didn't just say, oh, it's cold out there. I went upstairs and got a nice warm ruana and wrapped myself in it, kind of a nice little woolly tent for the second zazen. So I said, well, no, instead of going to, maybe before I go to the Buddhist hell reserved for people who put on shawls when they're cold instead of sitting there cold, I'll talk instead about the koan that says, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. So a monk asked Master Yunmen, another one of our great ancestors, Master Yunmen. Yeah, the monk asked, what is the great truth of the Buddha Dharma? I've been seeking this truth. It matters so much. And Master Yunmen said, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. That's all he said. So one master says, stick it out when you're cold, don't budge. And the other one says, go put on a jacket. You're cold. So am I just citing a contrarian view to excuse myself for putting on a shawl because I was chilly? Do the koans contradict each other? It would be much more interesting. I mean, who cares? I'm shuffling around a little. The interesting thing is, because sometimes I shuffle, sometimes I don't. That's the scenery of my life, right? But what's interesting is, do those two koans contradict each other? When you're cold, the cold kills you. That's just what is. Get to know it. And when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. Is this just Zen obfuscation and riddle? No, it's really not. It's really a very important point. Because if you just find it irritating, confusing, irritating, you're missing the boat. You're getting trapped in the weeds of this. Well, one saying one thing and one saying another. The two koans are in complete agreement. And it's a very important point they want to make. So Tozan says, Master Tozan says, meet your circumstances as they are. It's cold, it's cold. If it's hot, it's hot. That squirming and wiggling and wriggling around, making a little nest, are suffering, and they use up your precious energy. And they distract you. And then you can't see what's going on. That kind of wriggling moves you off your seat. You're off balance. You don't really know where you are. And in fact, you are kind of off balance and about to fall into Richard's lap. And so then it's hard to make it to respond directly to what else is coming because you're sort of off here, tilting. When we're wriggling around, we can't respond straightforwardly. I'm sure each of you has noticed, as I have, that when we're wriggling around or scratching or, you know, we're not able at the same time to actually pay attention to what else is going on. We're really not very good at multitasking. If we really can't both be a little bit, you know, actually there's this little itch here, and actually really be paying good attention to something else out there in front of me, like a person or an express train coming at me or flies. And yet we think we are great multitaskers. Two little things, and we really can't do them both. So all this, the squirming we do, we aren't noticing That's what I'm noticing at that point. Well, I would really like my life to be more about notice than just squirming, you know, my awareness, my consciousness. So you stay put, and you can hear your life happening. You can listen. You can listen to another person, to what they say, you can listen to their face, how it looks. You can hear. Not only do you see what you're meeting, but you're there then. Because we know ourselves in our interaction. Well, am I just this? Well, yeah, sometimes. That kind of squirming around. But when I'm here saying, oh, here's where I am, my life is much deeper. Sometimes those circumstances are really painful, sometimes they're not. So wherever I am, being there, my life is much deeper for being there. And I know that other times I'll get distracted and just wander off. This is our human world. But staying put, we can meet our life in a much broader context. And then there's Master Tozan. When it's cold, it's cold. When it's hot. There you are. That's your life. That's your world. And Master Yunmen says, and then knowing, staying put, being there, being here, meeting the circumstances of your life, then accord with your circumstances as they are. I'm hungry. I'll eat something. Well, we don't usually do that, right? It's lunchtime, or it's our time for our lunch break, or someone shows up, or we've made a date with someone for a meal, or we just have an urge to eat something. It has often, a lot of the time, or we're nervous about eating too much, too little. All this stuff going on here that is not actually about I'm hungry, I eat. When we're tired, what do we think? Well, I can do a little more work. Because we're such a hardworking culture, we really are very hardworking people. I can do a little more work. If that's what I say. We push ourselves further. We avoid sleep. And then later, we sleep to avoid something else. We're so complicated. That's one of the things Master Yunmen is saying. Why be so complicated? If you're tired, sleep. If you're hungry, eat. It's not easy to do. Now, he's not just saying be something called spontaneous. The big spontaneity mystique with Zen. He's saying know where you are, what's happening, know that intimately, which you can only do with cultivating a considerable awareness, careful awareness of yourself and others and what's happening. Cultivate a wide and deep awareness, then you can know what's going on. Then you can respond straightforwardly. You can accord with. You know, if two people are this according with circumstance, two people, Edna and I, are in accord on something. There's a meeting of the two. We could be in close accord. Then you say there's some trust there. There's a new whole, a new something has emerged out of two people in close accord. I can be in accord with a stone I feel particularly close to, the one I used to have on the altar came to my mind. Something which we can feel a relationship. We can be in accord with. A relationship where we can feel harmonious is where accord is. So to accord with circumstances is to see them as they are, to meet them as they are, and to be able to be harmonious with them. It's hard enough for us to do with something simple and to be in accord with the day with the blue sky and the sun out. Is somehow have to be aware of it and responding to it as it is, relating to it as part of my own life. Not saying, oh, it's blue sky, maybe I'll go for a walk later and then it's gone. I put it out of my mind. I wasn't in accord with it. So Yunmen eats when he's hungry because he has has spent a lifetime settling into knowing what's going on here and what's going on there and how to meet those two together, and then how can he can in some sense naturally accord. So what we usually do with circumstances is what we control them, we manipulate them, we're victimized by them, or we just work hard. That was generally my approach. So the Katagiri, once we were in the Hokyoji, the country monastery, and he walked by and sort of shook his head and said, "You have to know the one who's not a hard worker." I was a hard worker. That's one good way to meet circumstance. You can be a hard worker. Or you can be laissez-faire. You can control, you can be victimized, you can think that things out there are hampering my life without knowing whether that's true or not, because that's my feeling about it. And until we learn to settle so that I'm here and can experience my life here and be aware of it, and then I be aware of what's out there and how we meet, until then, well, should I put on a jacket or just sit there? I won't have a good basis for deciding. I'm likely then to be impulsive. Oh, well, I'll just choose one. I mean, they're all equally good. I'll just go with the flow, or I'll be impulsive, or I'll just do what I want, or I'll have some basis for doing something. But those are kind of shaky basis. It doesn't teach you anything about life. Well, maybe it's not just putting on a jacket or not putting on a jacket. You're sitting with your friend who's weeping. Do you sit there with them, with this person? Do you try to find a way to fix it? Do you suggest you both go fishing? Well, there isn't one right way. Life is complex, and there are always many ways to respond. It isn't easy to live your life straightforwardly, in harmony with them. You can't always, no matter how much you in harmony you are with yourself and another person, always get it right. But you can do something that is authentically, here I am and here you are, and this is a way I see for us to meet, to be in harmony, to be in accord. And then you see if that can go forward. That's when I can set down, am I going to do the right thing? You know, can I rise to the occasion? With the best of intentions, I want to rise to the occasion, and I'm not sure what the right best thing is to do. And then it's all about me and my little teeth in my mouth. My fingers in my teeth. That's it. My teeth are already in my mouth. My fingers join them, right? Because I'm anxious. What is the right thing to do? I'm not paying any attention anymore to the person I'm with, or to the rapport or accord that can emerge between us. So I'll miss all kinds of cues. So, when I'm hungry, I eat. To accord with circumstances, not just to be in accord with. That's the passive form. This is an activity, to accord with circumstances. Fingertips meeting, hands meeting. So it's to act in harmony with events, for one thing, or to be of one piece with the events, with whatever is happening here. To be of one mind with beings is to accord with circumstance. So, but this is a, how do you do this? How do you live in peace and harmony? How do you accord with circumstance of your life? By according with the Dharma. And when we hear a phrase that sounds a little vague, like according with the Dharma, we say, oh, it really means to accord with circumstance. Our original Zen teacher, Bodhidharma, in maybe 5th century of the Common Era, about 1600 years ago or so, we have a short teaching of his about the attitude of Zen, the attitude I will take. Always, the very first teachings in Zen are about what's the attitude I will take to life. And he describes four practices. And the fourth is, the completion of this is called, he called, according with the Dharma. I said, oh, to come into harmony with circumstances. And what's under the, how can I do that? By seeing the circumstances are made of the same stuff as me. Their impermanence, I'm impermanence. Their interconnection, I'm interconnection. That's because we are of the same nature, we can come into accord with each other. And then, so now if I want to be in accord with Edme, we're going to do this as two separate people. It's called boundaries. We're going to do this as two separate people. Two separate people meeting and having accord. And with someone you know well, it might be a closer accord than with someone else. But when we talk about our life according with circumstance or according with the Dharma, we're saying coming up from inside. It's not I'm meeting the circumstances or another person out, the events of my life is happening outside me. I am part of that. It's not me and life coming together. It's already, I'm the Dharma, meeting the Dharma. I'm circumstance, meeting circumstance. Together, we are one set of circumstances, one movement. It's your life of harmonizing with your world, not just so there's music playing, and dance music playing. And there's talking to someone and not really noticing it. There's noticing it and just sitting there. There's letting your body respond a little bit, tapping your foot. And then there's getting up and dancing. And according with circumstance and according with the Dharma are when we're getting up dancing, when we're participating fully in that harmony. How do we do that? How is my latest favorite word. Why is not so useful. How is a pretty good word. How do I do that? It says, I want to do this, and I don't quite get it. How? It's a very positive word if we take it as that. How do I do this? How do I see how to, that in some way this seems, oh yes, I can settle my life. How? How does this tell me about that? When I see the events swirling around me as my life, when I see the events swirling around me as swirling, as impermanent, as change, as flowing, when I see the events around me and coming toward me and receding away as the interconnection of interwoven life, then I can be in harmony with them as I am and as they are. Because I know that I'm made of the same stuff. But of course, we can't sit there doing this in our head in kind of a logical sequence. I see this person as a swirl of impermanence, and so I'll relate to them as that, and here's how I'll do it. That's not going to work, right? We're trying to find a way to bring that up naturally from within us, to be present with ourselves, with another, in accord with life as it is, not in friction with it. And that was when I first read the Bodhidharma. I saw that my choices that he was presenting when he said to accord with the Dharma, my alternative is to be in friction with it, which is basically a lot of life. Participate with what is around you as part equally shared basis, not me on top directing traffic, in the impermanent swirl of life. Then we are all circumstances expressing life, expressing Dharma together. So according with the Dharma means to know that you're integrally part of it and to act on that. Events I meet are themselves the Dharma. It's not just some petty circumstance. Circumstances are not petty. They are life. How I interact with them is what's going to be petty or not. Pause. I don't like petty. Pause is the word. Meaning thin, meager. Am I going to respond and relate to things in a meager way? Well, my life is meager. Am I going to relate to them as vivid and have a vivid connection with them? Relate to them as real, have a vivid connection? Well, then my life is vivid. Then I'll know if I'm hungry, when I'm hungry, that I'm hungry. And then I can say, no, time to just sit here, continue driving the car when I'm hungry. It's another one. So actually, maybe a better thing than the cold. Most of us, when we feel hungry, we think, now I better eat something. Actually, I've discovered it's really much more, my life is much calmer. If when I'm hungry, I can just say, I'm hungry. It's even a little uncomfortable, but I'm doing something else right now. Then I'll eat when there's a time that seems like a good time to eat, rather than being pushed around by my sensation. Newman is saying he wants to be free. He's hungry to eat or to keep driving the car. He's not saying I always eat the minute I have a hunger pang. He's saying I do what is natural and appropriate to the circumstance of me and my life right then. That's what he's saying. It's kind of a deep kind of appropriateness. I'm not talking Emily Post here. A deep kind of appropriateness. I really know myself and do something. And then that looks spontaneous, in a sense, because there's a directness. But this directness, this immediacy, and straightforwardness, or vividness in our life, takes place in the ordinary daily activities of sitting down and standing up and eating and working and sleeping and coming and going and trying to connect with other people. It's one of the harder ones for us. When I remember that everything I'm encountering, large and small in my view of it, every one of those things is my life, then my life settles and blooms. My life gets wider. To get to that, when the bell rings, I come into the zendo and sit down and do zazen. Maybe I put on a shawl, maybe I don't. Maybe one time I don't want to bother, I'll just sit cold. Another time I'll put on a shawl, another time there won't be a shawl, another time it's the middle of the shin and I don't want to put it over my robes. So you come into, the bell rings, you come in and you sit down. All this other stuff is going on in the landscape of our minds. I want to, I don't want to, should I do this, should I not do that? It's always going to be fluttering around there like a flock of butterflies or these big black flies. The bell rings, I come into the zendo and sit down. I've already discerned that this is a good thing to do, so now I'll do it, although right now I feel like it, now I don't feel like it. I won't ignore. Don't ignore how you feel about it. I want, I don't want it. We need to know, but we don't have to be pushed around by it so much. Both of these guys, Tozan and Yunmen, are saying, don't get so pushed around by what's going on right now, how it feels right now, as though that were the basis of your authenticity. Know what you feel, know what you think. Now, the bell rings, I'll come in and sit down and do zazen. Because I will be in the middle of my life when I do that. May not feel like it at the time, but I know that about it, so I'll come in and sit down. I know that it's a true way to be in this moment. And I know that I can offer so much of the time not know what's a true way to be in this moment, so I'll sit down. Or sit and look at the hills, another true way to be in the moment. Or sit with another person. Or look at the sky. To know the ways that we know to be true in the moment, to know ourselves as true in a moment. For me, I got to get rid of a whole lot of stuff to find that. So I do zazen. Because it's so distracting, this wonderful, busy world. And then that life settles when you are in accord with what's going on in your life at that moment. The Dharma means all circumstances are always expressing the truth of change and the truth of connection. And this is the whole world, and this is your life. And acting in accord with that is a way of describing the aim of this practice. To come into, over and over again, to come into accord with that. And then to be in a true relation with others and with ourselves. And the experience of this is what is commonly called peace. We don't have to be rich or famous. We don't have to have a 16-foot tall golden body of a Buddha. The world of Dharma is already here, all around us, as us, and is finding our way home in a true relation to ourselves and others. That's our peace. It's too late to go out and walk under the blue sky. It's turned gray again. This is our life. So we can go outside and walk under a beautiful gray sky. So, any thoughts about this? Or do I get so abstract that it doesn't connect?
This is sort of a side issue. You know, when we've been chanting on Monday mornings, the precious mirror somebody, and there's that one line in there that I've always loved, that when the storm woman gets up to dance.
Yes.
And that's, it occurred to me, that's what we're talking about here is when you actually accord with inside and outside in this long vision, that's when you can just get up and do the dance of life. But as long as you keep seeing yourself as apart from the conditions of your life, then you're split and it kind of freezes you up.
Right, it turns you into the line is, when the wooden man begins to sing, the stone woman gets up to dance. The stone woman is an image of this inertness. And when I do that, when I'm here doing my thing and I'm not connected to the flow of life yet, I'm inert. I feel as though everything else is inert and I'm alive, but I've actually made myself inert. And but it's always time for the stone woman to get up to dance. Yeah, I always thought that if I ever write an autobiography, I'd call it, or a memoir, I'd call it Stone Woman Dancing. That's the title I would want to get into.
Jisho, I was just wondering what came to me was delusion. How delusion fits into this, because you talk about the eat with your hungry, and but at the same time feeling it when you're feeling it, and I wonder if there is a because I feel like a lot of times I'm sort of stuck in the middle between those two, and delusion sort of arises.
It fills every little nook and cranny, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so
how do I know whether I'm being deluded or going directly forward, right?
Yeah.
Good question.
Well,
I'm saying everyone suddenly is going to perk up on that question. That's real. Yeah, that's.
Is little. There a difference?
Yes. Yes, and yes. But I may not. I won't know which is which. Delusion is my real inability and unawareness of how things really are, and my removal of myself from that. And because I don't, it's very hard to know. You in some way can't know when it's when you're acting out of delusion or acting not. It's just as you can't, you know, all the different cognitive psychologies of the world, Buddhist and Western, have said, you know, actually, how do you really know anything outside of your skull? You say that's something out there, but your mind is creating a story. Maybe we're all dreaming. You know, Chuang Tzu says, well, I don't know, am I a man dreaming I was a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming I'm a man?
Perfect.
So how do I know if I'm deluded?
Perfect.
What I do is I go back to the reality of according or friction. When I am settled, one of the things about Zen, for instance, is I have this form. I put myself in it, and I'm doing Zen, even when I'm full of delusion. And I'm not in some way responsible for having to figure out how deluded I am or am not at this moment. I'm doing my best to aim to feel like I'm taking my body and mind in a direction of being here in the middle of my delusion. So it's not a matter of assessing if I'm deluded or not, but I can have a sense of I'm aiming. That's the importance of vow, or repentance and vow. Repentance says, oh my God, I am so deluded. That's repentance. Oh my God, I'm deluded. That I know that. I can't say when I'm not. I don't know I am. And then I can say, oh, I want to turn my energy toward being awake, toward being here, toward being connected, toward being in accord with life. Even though I don't quite know what that is, I can have a sense of turning that way. And that movement is what I can rely on. Or the being, aiming to be, being aware.
So is delusion a natural state, or is awake a natural state?
You know, that's, you know how many Buddhist philosophers have, yeah. You're not, it's a good, that's, it's a really good question, Angie. Delusion is a natural state that clouds our natural awareness. Our awakeness, Buddhism is a hope, in a sense, a positive spiritual teaching. It says here's a natural condition. We are naturally already here and then naturally already in accord. But we take our conscious mind up from that, and the conscious mind creates delusion because the conscious mind works by me here, you there, protect this one. Maybe you're a threat. And then goes on and on from there. And our mind naturally does that. Luckily, it's not all it does. So in a sense, delusion is natural. It occurs universally among beings with consciousness.
Nice things.
But it's natural, and also in the sense that something is... at the same time, it's natural only in the sense that we have this conscious mind that does all these complicated things. So delusion is a complicated thing I'm doing with my mind. In that sense, it's not real because it's not this interactive, interdependent reality, all one thing with another. So in a sense, it's real, natural. This brain is naturally the natural product of this poor old brain. In another sense, it's not natural because it's, what's naturally real is the natural, impermanent, interactive world. So it has a way in which it's real, natural, and a way in which it's, in a sense, unnatural.
Delusion is protection?
No, we thinking we need protection
is delusion.
Thinking we need it where we don't need it is delusion. There are kinds of protection we need. But thinking we need it where we don't need it is delusion.
Isn't that partly why we need teachers in the Sangha? Or to point, I mean, when we're in delusion...
To keep pointing us back.
Right.
Yes.
That seems to me why it's one of the three...
That's why we have three treasures.
Treasures.
And they are treasures.
We can't do it without it.
Yeah. Because I'm not going to know when I'm deluded. I mean, the precepts, no one outgrows them. They're not rules, but no one outgrows them because every one of us, there's no such thing as being so enlightened that you aren't capable of some misguided thought. And if you think you're not capable of it... there's no one, no reason to graduate from. We need things that remind us. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are that container that holds our life in a large way, within which we bounce back and forth, delusion and awakening. So in some sense, yes, you take away delusion, and what's there is this natural awakening coming up. But the dualistic mind that creates delusion is natural. Maybe delusion isn't that, but the dualistic mind that creates it is very natural.
It's just something I'll throw it out. Delusion is sort of like being fooled.
Yeah.
We've been fooled, or we're deluded. We've been fooled by something. So it's like you believe when you're fooled. You believe something. It's not real. So that's like being deluded. We're fooled by the universe. We're fooled by circumstances. We're fooled by our mind into believing something is true that's not.
And yet for some reason, I have said for some years that I aspire to be a fool. Be better in there. Going in deeper. But yeah, we need, you know, to say being deluded is like being fooled is, we need to, is wonderful. We need to pick up, and different phrases will pick it up and capture it for us at different times. We don't still have to think of any one of them as complete, but one of them becomes vivid, and that's a very vivid way to see it. And another, you know, there are many different vivid ways to pick it up.